All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by The Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Oilers Nation Radio, episode 90. The Joey Juno episode. That was a good pull, huh?
Great pull.
Joey Juno.
Joey Juno.
Come on, man.
Played for the Capitals, played for the Bruins.
Yeah, he wasn't an Oiler. He had a couple good years too. Yeah, shout out to Joey Juno. I want to thank all the boys for being here. Of course, Rick is here. Tyler Remchuk, what are you snacking on there, buddy?
A little pizza that I made in my air fryer.
Oh, nice. And of course, we got Nation Dan here. Although, is he still Nation Dan? I saw you talking about a new Twitter handle, my friend.
Well, yeah, we're working on it. We're workshopping it. We're checking to see what's available, what's not available. But yes, for now, the Nation Dan.
I'm what are you going to change it to?
Dan from Halifax. Well,
we don't know. We're talking about all kinds of different things, and it's not because I'm leaving the nation or anything. It's just a change, you know, just to see what sticks to the wall.
I'm going to start it. A rumor that you're leaving the nation, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, Dan's leaving the nation.
I'm joining the Athletic.
He's writing an article right now.
Yeah, it's SB Nation Dan.
What episode is it, Meg Milk? Sorry,
number 90.
Number 90. Oh, what? Logan Day. Logan Day wore 90 at training camp, I guess.
Anybody else?
Nope, that's it. Well, just Logan.
So I'm sticking with Joey Juno then. That's
right. There you go.
I want to go ahead and shout out our friends at Sherwood Ford, the Giants, for helping make all of this possible. Go ahead and follow them on Twitter at Sherwood Ford and on Instagram at Sherwood Ford _ the Giants. They are posting all kinds of new vehicles on their Instagram account. I love them. They're also helping out with service and anything else you need, because they are fine folks with fine vehicles and fine personalities. And they're also very, very handsome. That's just my opinion, but I think it would also be your opinion as well. Go check out Sherwood Ford in beautiful Sherwood Park, Alberta.
What happened?
Nothing. I buffered there for a second. I got a text. I got a text message from Gregor, and it was just like, I was trying to read it, and I'm like, I don't even know if this is in English, man. But that's okay. I'll deal with that later.
I thought you were waiting for us to give you some kind of like Sherwood Park line there.
And I just took a big bite of pizza, and I was like, oh boy, I don't think I can talk right now.
We are going to blame Gregor for this. He just posted an article on OilersNation.com about offense in the playoffs, and will it be heightened, especially in the play-in round, because guys haven't played for, according to his math, 122 days. So This is all in a text message, by the way, fellas. So there's a lot of numbers in here. So I was trying to process the information here on the fly.
Texted you a whole article?
No, he didn't text me a whole article, but he did text me a sizable portion of what he was talking about in it. I mean,
I envision Gregor just like sitting down and then quickly being like, and I have an article idea. And then just sitting on his phone and texting it all to you for you to post. Like 1,200 words just hammered out without him stopping.
I have been posting and helping Gregor post articles and add images and videos and whatever he needs for a long time now, 6 years at least. And my favorite is when I get to do it on location, wherever he's at, because the laptop, like Gregor is a successful dude. Mm-hmm. The laptop that guy is running is shockingly old. I don't know how to use it. Everything is all squished. He's got a million tabs open. They don't run well. Anyway, Gregor, point here, get a new laptop, I guess. Anyway, on Monday, we are getting closer to having hockey back, gentlemen, and it's exciting for me. Phase two of the NHL's return to play plan kicked off on Monday, We are back on the ice, meaning that groups of six or less can practice together. One interesting angle added by TSN's Ryan Rashog. I didn't know that if you pick your six, you got to stick with those six all the way through. You can't mix and match. So my first question to you before we move on to training camps that kick off on July 10th, how would you like to see the Oilers pairing up for these early skates, whatever you want to call them, these voluntary workouts until training camp kicks off on the 10th of July?
Just to clarify that, it's if you pick your six, that's the group of six you're with. It's not that they only can have six players training, right?
Yeah, you can have multiple groups of six people, okay. But once you're in a group of six, you need to continue skating with that six.
My brain was on that one. Yep. There you go. Perfect. Thank you.
So this first group, it just seemed like whoever was in town got on the ice and started playing together. But it also brings kind of an interesting angle. Let's say, Tyler, you wrote about line combinations the other day. Let's say the whole second line comes back to town. Would you prefer to see Nuge, Draisaitl, Yamamoto, a couple of defensemen working together, or do you not care at this point?
For me, sometimes the best way to find something is to not look at all. So I think they should just, kind of like they would do in gym class when you're in elementary school, line everyone up, and I want Dave Tippett to just go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Sticks in the middle.
Sticks in the middle. Just completely random. Maybe you'll find some chemistry. But in all seriousness, no, I think they should try. Like, I would hope that like McDavid, Nuge, Leon, Yamamoto, maybe even Cassian, like maybe the top six forwards, I'll just kind of go, hey, let's all roll back into town on July 1 or June 25, and let's start skating then, and let's try to keep us six in a cluster so that we can start working together. And since there's, you know, skill players in the top six, they can have drills that work for skilled forwards in the top six kind of thing. I think that's probably the way to go.
What's the distance between, like, because some guys, like Ovechkin right now is skating in Florida with a bunch of NHLers, right? So he's not in Washington, he's not skating with his own teammates. What kind of timeline does he need to go between leaving that ice surface and say going to Washington and skating with his own teammates? Because if it's not a thing, like why would Connor come home right now when training camp starts on the 10th?
Well, that's gonna be an interesting question too. Like Connor, right?
What's the rush in coming home right now? Like well, if Connor, really maybe Connor skating with better players out there or whatever. Maybe he's more comfortable being around Gary Roberts or whatever. Everyone's going to have their own little different nuances here. But I want to know what kind of timeline between skating outside of your city and skating in your, with your teammates.
Well, Rashog also tweeted about that yesterday. He spoke to the fact that the Canadian government or the federal government is looking to do something about the 14-day quarantine that guys are going to have to go through if they want to come back to Canada. I think that really pertains to us, not only being a hub city, but also for training camp and trying to get the guys back into the same area together, right? Like, because guys like Klefbom, who are in Sweden right now, can't come back without waiting 14 days after they arrive. So, yeah, there's all kinds of still logistical stuff there.
That part has kind of been interesting to me, the 14-day quarantine thing, because I was actually hoping There were some rumblings on Twitter earlier this week that we would have a Hub City announcement at some point today. I was hoping that it would happen before we started recording the podcast, but no such luck. I almost wondered if, and I know there's no rush, Rick is 100% right, but I almost wondered if, because of that 14-day quarantine, if the Oilers maybe say to a guy like Clefbaum, hey man, you're going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks. You got a house here, I assume, or a place that he stays anyway. Just make your way back here, and then we'll deal with it later.
You'd want him back before, obviously, 2 weeks before day one of training camp, if nothing has changed, right? We kind of assume things will change in terms of the government and let these players back. But if nothing changes, you're going to want him back at least 2 weeks before day one of training camp. This way you can get us 2 weeks in and be ready to roll.
I also think, like, obviously we're guessing here, because on Tuesday I wrote for The Nation that the NHL was hoping to start training camp in mid-July. And then 2 days later, there was the announcement from the NHL and the PA being like, July 10th, let's roll. So things change very, very quickly. By the time you even listen to this podcast, maybe there's some new news. I don't know. Tyler, do you care when boys get back in town, or should they just be doing their thing?
Yeah, just let them do their thing. I don't really give a shit. As long as you're back and ready to go for training camp, I don't care if you take... Oh, excuse me. I was eating trail mix. I got something stuck in my throat.
That's why he doesn't care. He's munching on trail mix.
So he had some pizza here and some trail mix. Tyler Yaremchuk pulling a Jay Downton and having snacks during the pod.
Yeah, it was pretty
good. Doesn't bring anything to the office for it.
Whatever, man. Just get back. I'd be sending out a blanket statement to the players being like, hey, the rink is open. If you want to come early, get your two-week quarantine over with and start skating in groups of six. We would love it. If not, you better be here July 10, and you better be ready for group activities July 10, not rolling into Edmonton and being like, I'll see you guys on the 24th. I got to stay in my hotel for 2 weeks. Like, just be ready to go for training camp.
And to that point, too, think about the Boston Bruins right now and how big of a bullet they dodged with one of their players testing positive for COVID. And then now, you know.
Yeah, but they didn't even say where he was, though.
No, but that's what I'm saying is that if they had had him back in a group of six, maybe you have six players all of a sudden that have COVID.
But it happened in Germany with the soccer players, and that didn't escalate at all.
No, right? But it's just every time you put together a bigger group of people, you're exponentially increasing the chances of issues coming up, like happened with Boston, it's happened with Pittsburgh, happened with the Senators. Every one of those teams has had that issue. But yeah, I mean, it's part of the risk of coming back as we are trying to come back before an immunization. But yeah, it's just it's wild to think.
Looking at the calendar here, so if training camp kicks off on July 10th, that's a Friday, they would have to be in town for like this 2 week quarantine period no later than the 25th, which is the Thursday, so the 2 weeks would take them up to the 9th. So that would give the guys just under 2 weeks to get back here. Again, obviously that depends on what happens with the Canadian government. Like Dan said a little bit earlier, Rashog tweeted that they are working on it to see if they can get it passed on that. Another question, seeing as we're moving into phase three in a few weeks here, just how has your opinion changed? And this is actually going to be a mailbag question on Monday that I thought was interesting. With training camp starting on July 10th, how has your opinion changed in the 3 months since the last game? Have you gone from this season's going to be canceled, fuck's sakes, to where we are now? Because today, actually, as we're recording this, it's 3 months exactly since the NHL shut it down. How's your opinion changed over these last 3 months?
You can go ahead, Rick, actually. You're passionate.
I think it's been pretty standard. I was always hopeful. And I think the loudest words were, you know, like mid-July, August for training camp playoffs. So I think we've been kind of lucky to run along the timeline that they've pretty much put out earlier.
Tyler, I'll go ahead before you because I'm a little bit more passionate than you.
Yeah, good call.
He's got trail mix again there.
Yeah, the thing for me with the whole process has just been really refreshing to see, for the most part, that the league has really handled it, I feel like, well. other than maybe trying to rush in a draft that has suddenly gone away, that conversation has dissipated since then. The league has just really handled everything well, and the PA and the league are working together, which is something that's rare for us to see. You watch a baseball example, and Tyler can kind of probably speak more to this, but you know that there's baseball where they had pivoted themselves and had themselves set up to open up on July the 4th, Independence Day. Everything about it was perfect, but the PA and the league have just absolutely fumbled that ball, and they sit now idle and have no real plan for getting baseball done. So it's just it's been impressive to watch. For myself, I'm kind of always been in the same spot. August has always been my August, September was where I thought we were going to get playoff hockey if we were going to get it. And then, you know, if they canceled it, they canceled it. I'm happy that they're still pushing for it and still trying to get this season done. And I think that's more selfishly as an Oilers fan than anything else, just because I want to see our team in the playoffs. But yeah, I'm pretty much at the same spot. It's been refreshing to watch the PA and the NHL work well together ahead of another CBA that we have to talk about soon.
Naturally, I consider myself a bit of a pessimistic person, and everyone listening to this podcast probably goes like, yeah, no shit. And I was pessimistic about this whole thing. Like when the season got canceled, I was like, or when it got put on pause, I considered it canceled. I was like, it's probably not coming back. And as we rolled along, I was like, what is this season ever going to look like? Obviously with no fans, but like hub cities, the whole time I was just like, it's not going to feel like the real Stanley Cup playoffs. It's not going to feel legitimate. And even a part of me right now, it's less so right now, but still I'm just like, you know, it's summer here in Edmonton. It's beautiful out. I have enough things to distract me from hockey for the next 2-3 months that if they would have came out 2 weeks ago and said, hey, the season's done, we're starting again in September with the 2020-2021 season, I probably wouldn't have been too upset of it or about it. But now that there's a date on it, and now that I'm starting to kind of wrap my head around what it's going to look like, how this is all going to work, I am getting excited. I'm thrilled that the league is coming back, and that's honestly not something I thought I'd be saying. I didn't think I'd be saying that a month ago. Honestly, I didn't think I would. I thought I'd be more pessimistic about it, but I'm not. And I think to Dan's point, a lot of that credit for me being happy and excited goes to the league and the players kind of putting their differences aside and saying, we need hockey to be back and we're going to find a way to make it work. And I'm really happy that they found a way to do that. And we're not sitting here, you know, if we were a baseball podcast right now, we'd be pissed. We'd be sitting here talking about what a shit show the owners are. Why buy baseball teams if you hate the sport of baseball? We'd be sitting there talking about the players, and some of us may be making an argument that they're being selfish and they should shut up and go to work and do stuff for the fans who pay money to watch these guys. So I'm happy that the league was able to make this work and that they seem to be on the same page. And August 3rd, 4th, hockey's going to be back, and I'm excited that it will be.
Tyler, just since you brought up baseball a couple of times, so did Dan, could you just give us a little bit of context for people that don't know what's going on in baseball right now?
So basically, their season never even got started. And when things were canceled, there was a general sense that, you know, there's an opportunity, as Dan said, for baseball to come back on July 4th, one of the biggest days on the calendar south of the border. It would be this great hurrah moment of sports returning, baseball on July 4th, all is right in the world, and they dropped the ball big time. They're arguing over money. The owners are saying they barely make anything, and they can't afford to pay the players if there's not a full season, and they need the playoff money, blah, 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 blah. The players are sitting there going, if we play half the games, we deserve half the pay. The owners are kind of going, well, if you play half the games, but there's no fans, how about we give you 35% of the money? And they've basically just been squawking back and forth, fighting in the media, fighting on social media about money. And it's really frustrating, and it's a terrible look. It comes off as incredibly tone deaf at a time where people have lost their jobs, where people miss sports, where people want that sense of normalcy. And the owners and players are fighting over their millions of dollars and who gets more. Like, it sucks.
And just not to continue the baseball conversation too much, because this is a hockey podcast, but to the point too there, Tyler, baseball is the sport that everybody kind of points to when shit gets real, you know, real tough around the world. That baseball is kind of the sport that just continues to come back, and it helps heal people, and it helps people get back to normal. And here we are, you know, talking about baseball just absolutely fumbling it.
Yeah, and like you go back, remember on 9/11 when George Bush walked out in front of Yankee Stadium and threw that pitch. Like, that was such a big rallying moment for people in the U.S. And baseball has always kind of had that. I mean, it's America's pastime, right? It's always had that feel-good side of it. And man, the 30 people, the 30 families or whatever that own baseball teams right now, they are shitting the bed.
Before we move on to the Sherwood Ford Giant question of the week, I got to ask a little personal question here. Tyler, what is your favorite part of the trail mix you're eating right now?
Well, this is the one I got from Costco. So it's the Kirkland brand that has the M&Ms, but they also
Costco didn't even pay for that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But they also have another one there that has like little yogurt chips in it and cranberries. And I like the combination of yogurt chips and cranberries in that one. But in the one I'm eating right now, I don't think you can have a favorite part of trail mix, if I'm being honest. It's all about the combination of flavors, like, and how they're dispersed. When I reach in here, I want one M&M, I want one of these little raisins, I want one almond, and I want one, I think this is a peanut. And it's delicious.
There's one thing I'll say. Bagnell, you have an eye for content that is just going to go perfectly. And that was one of them right there.
I'm going to selfishly throw in that I think Tyler is 100% wrong. You can absolutely have a favorite part of trail mix. And it is always the M&Ms. Always.
Okay, but then chocolate. But then you're not appreciating the trail mix. You just want to eat M&Ms. So just go buy a fucking bag of M&Ms.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to pretend that I'm healthy by also eating, nuts raisins that are very well salted, and raisins as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rick. Rick understands me. All right. That brings us now, gentlemen, time for the Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week.
Giant. Sherwood Ford Giant Question of the Week. As I finish chewing up a mouthful of trail mix, there is a report going around at Jesse Puljujärvi. Well, I mean, it's not really a report. There's a story going around. Jesse Puljujärvi, for sort of the second time since the shutdown, first time to our friend Larvinen, I believe, right, Bagged Milk?
That's correct. Yeah, in late April, yeah. Jesse Puljujärvi was playing some vids on Twitch, and he was asked about a possible return to the Edmonton Oilers. And again, for the second time, or I guess the first time, he said, never say never.
And he says it again. So my question is centered around Puljujärvi saying never say never in the Oilers. It seems like his tone is starting to change. So would you say there is a more or less than 50% chance that Jesse Puljujärvi plays another game for the Edmonton Oilers? It's a simple one, but I'm throwing it out there because these comments are starting to change people's minds. Not really changing mine, but I'll get your guys' take first.
I'm optimistic. I'll go yes.
But I figured Rick would go. I mean, you've always been in Puljujärvi's corner, so I figured
I always said, you know what, I think this is the way it's going to end up turning out, is that eventually he's going to have to take a couple steps towards the middle. We've got new guys here in Tippett and Holland. And I always said, if they went there and showed him the love, that I think he'd be able to get over some of his disappointment and his hard feelings about his time here. And I still stand by that. And I think Holland's proven that that's his best option. And because no team out there has offered us anything, and the offers aren't going to get any higher. So if he wants to play, he might as well just come over and it's kind of like, tuck your tail, come over, let's start fresh, and let's see what we can do.
Dan, what do you think?
I listened to Rick, and he is ever the optimist, and I appreciate that. I want to believe that that's the case.
Hey, 51-49 in terms of him coming here is on the over, so you can take the over here.
Good enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the media is still.
Bob and Jack both came out today and had a little tweet about it too.
Yeah.
What did they say to paraphrase?
They pretty much said his best option is to come here, and neither one of them would have been surprised if he does.
Those are two guys who are pretty well connected. So if they're coming out and saying that, there's weight behind it.
They're doing it on their own. Like, there was no real talk before it. There was that little blurb that came out, but they didn't have to say anything on it. I didn't see anybody putting anything towards them asking for their response. So I think they put their response out there kind of on their own, which does have a little more weight to me.
It's the move makes sense, right? Like, give a guy another chance with the roster that is way more filled in than it was when he was forced into the role.
So is the player.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. He's 2 years younger or 2 years older than he was when this nightmare started. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I just, there's still that part of me that just thinks that he's he's going to end up having to walk away from the Oilers, whether it's via trade or what.
When I look at it, I think of first of all, I got to give Ken Holland a lot of credit. Yeah. And I wrote it in my article today, because if this was still Pistol Pete at the helm and Jesse Puljujärvi asked for a trade, you know, he's moving in for a fifth round pick or something stupid like that. Whereas Uncle Ken, he said it multiple times last season, in the off season, and even during the year, that he was in no rush. He's like, go play in Finland. I don't care. I have a price in mind. And if that's not met, then we're not going to trade him. And I really, really appreciated that tactic with him. I thought it was great. And again, what are we talking about here? He's like a 23-year-old kid. Maybe he needed some time, got a little bit of confidence back over in Finland. He had a good season in the Finnish league. Maybe some fences are being mended. Maybe there's a bridge that's being built. Maybe it's time for him to come back and see the opportunity that he has with the team, because I have a real hard time, even if he wants a pump and dump trade to somewhere else, I have a real hard time believing that playing with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on that team would hurt that opportunity.
Even that third line looks pretty nice right now.
I'm giving you the air horns, Bagmill, because you hit the nail on the head, man. The patience Holland showed here in waiting and waiting and kind of letting Puljujärvi go do his own thing in Finland and not just getting rid of him for the sake of getting rid of him. He deserves a lot of credit. And, you know, at times I got a little frustrated and would say, you know, just get him out of here. Third round pick, his value is not going to go up. But this is why you pay Ken Holland $5 million a year or whatever they're giving him, right? To make these savvy veteran moves. And at this time, the best move was not making a move at all. So if he does come back, and I'm still on the under of 50%, I think it's Ken Holland who deserves way more than 50% of the credit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just to round out this topic, I think, I mean, I'll take the over at the 51-49. I think that it's time. The only concern I have is that I just hope that the players in the room don't care about the baggage and the public trade me requests from the agent. And I hope that doesn't matter, and that they would also give him an opportunity. I think they would, but again, I don't know any of them.
There was a guy who asked for a trade last winter sometime, who just got a three-year contract. So
that's very, very true. Again, Zach Kassian asked for a trade. That was like somewhere around Christmas as well.
Yeah, two Christmases ago.
So just to round out this topic, I posted the article last night at Oilers Nation. It was about 8 o'clock. I just want to read some of the feedback about Jesse Puljujärvi from Oilers fans. So this is what some people out in the streets are thinking, people on the Twitter machine. So just Jesse Puljujärvi on the possibility of an Oilers return says, never say never. Ryan is the first guy and says, doesn't play NHL hockey. I don't care. Scud, shout out to Scud. He just says pool party. So he's excited. But Bubba says, go hang that tongue out the rear window of someone else's minivan. I mean, I kind of like the visual on that one, but Bubba's not a big fan. Kim says, I don't want any of that. Kim, not a fan. Andrew just says, nope. So Cal Dave says, I never gave up hope. Get back here. Berta J says, it's 2020. Stranger things have happened. So it's very split. Oilers fans are very, very split on whether or not they think that Puljujärvi should come back. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, I wrote it in the article. It's like, I don't necessarily think we're anywhere close to finding a resolution on this. But it is interesting to see his tone change from, I'm never going to play for the Edmonton Oilers again, or whatever his agent said, to never say never. Windows open. Maybe he slides on in there. Slides in like a risky DM. Coming back. So there you have it. Sherwood Ford, giant question of the week. Jesse Puljujärvi, we'll see. We'll see. Just like Justin Bieber said, never say never. Looking at other Oilers news, Dmitry Samorukov, this morning, a report out of Russia came out that says he signed a one-year deal with CSKA Moscow of the KHL. And what's interesting about this is that he just wrapped up his first year of a three-year ELC. I mean, it got cut short, obviously, because the AHL season got canceled. So my question to you boys is, any concern that he's taking off to Russia, or are you in the camp that I'm in, seeing that the guy wants to play? The KHL is set to kick off in September at some point, and we still don't know where the AHL is going to be, when they're going to start. What do you guys think about Samorukov signing over in the KHL on a one-year deal?
I think Yeah, just with the AHL season next year still kind of being up in the air, and I did read that Ken Holland, I think, is going to be a part of like the board that kind of handles how they'll do play the AHL season next year. But I think this is just a chance to get a guy still playing against men, still playing against good competition, but get him maybe some more regular minutes and get him to a place where there's definitely going to be a league next season. It's not like this is Samarkov packing up his bag and saying, 1 year in the minors is enough for me, I'm going home. This is the Oilers loaning him to Russia. By all accounts, Ken Holland is on board with this decision, so I give it a big thumbs up. It's a chance to develop a prospect in a different league, but players develop in the KHL as well, so I'm all for it.
Well, yeah, and like in the player in Samarkov, we're talking about a guy that went from the OHL to the AHL last year, had 45 points. Also, just let me know if it's getting too loud here. All of a sudden, there's some work going on outside of my house. In the OHL, he had 45 points in 59 games, and then in the AHL last year, he had 10 points in 47 games. Obviously, a shortened season, but you see a regression of sorts from a player. I don't watch the guy enough to consistently to know whether he is, you know, if that was a regression or if it was just the expected drop from the OHL to the AHL. But yeah, I think that one of the things that we all talked about when we got Ken Holland is there's the guy that has the patience to be able to see through the development of players, specifically defensemen. And so Holland has stuffed those cupboards full of defensemen that can come up hopefully in the next couple of years and really make an impact on this team. So I think that having Samarkov over in Russia, like you said, Begmilk, gets him playing hockey games, hopefully COVID-free and not having to deal with any of those issues. But then also it just allows the player to go over there, play his hockey, come back next year fresh, you know, hit training camp if he wants to, and maybe he's in the AHL next year. But yeah, it's only a positive thing, I think, for a player of his caliber right now. We're not talking about him making the Oilers possibly next year versus going to the KHL. We're talking about him being the AHL versus the KHL.
See, I think he'd be in the AHL this year if we didn't have this COVID thing. Like, his best spot is to play in the AHL, but the AHL is nobody knows what's going on with it, right? So the best thing for him is to play hockey. So this is their backup plan. It's really bad for him to sit around and not play at all if Bakersfield's not going. So his numbers in the OHL and his numbers in the AHL, I think they're just fine. He also, you know, he would have been playing top minutes in the one and then became a rookie playing against men in the other. As far as I remember watching last year, he was a really good defenseman for them. But the biggest thing for him is to play, and things that we don't know what's going on with the AHL. He was never going to be an Oiler this year anyway. So, yeah, KHL is just fine. It's only because there is this whole COVID thing going on where it's putting the AHL season in jeopardy.
And I did see some concern again when the article went up on social media. I saw some concern from folks being like, why is he bailing to the KHL? But if you actually read beyond the headline, folks, pet peeve of mine, you would have saw Ken Holland did co-sign this move. So to me, that says this is exactly what you guys have mentioned, that it's about getting playing time. He's already in Russia. He's there. He might as well get some at-bats in a, like Tyler said, a very good league that will help his development further. And I bet when that 1 year is over, and if we're back to normal-ish or whatever that looks like, that he'll be right back with the Condors or wherever he ends up in the organization. I don't think this is one of those ones where it's a Teemu Hartikainen where he just leaves and never comes back again. So we'll see. Obviously, there's nothing to do but guess on it, but I feel confident. Dmitry Samarkov, you do you, buddy. You want to play a year in Russia? Go get it. I also, speaking of going to get it, you don't have to with our friends at Skip the Dishes. They'll bring it right to you. And gentlemen, I was very, very excited this week because on Nation Happy Hour that goes up every Wednesday and Friday, on Wednesday's edition, I was talking about my personal favorite donair shop in the West End called Sam's, and it had disappeared off Skip for 2 months. It was gone. And I was heartbroken because I thought that they just closed. Because unfortunately, this is a strange period to try and operate a business, and I thought I lost them. And then after Wednesday's Nation Happy Hour, I went on skipthedishes.ca and who was staring back at me but my glorious Donair shop in all its glory. So what did I do? I ordered myself a jumbo with cheese, banana peppers, sweet sauce, side of fries, and gravy. Get it. Thank you so
much. I'm an onion rings guy. Every time I get the old Donair combo, it's always onion rings.
I'm a big fan of restaurants that offer frings. I like the combination of the two.
I don't know if we can mention them or not, but it's Harvey's. Harvey's does the frings. Thank you very much.
I'm pretty sure Harvey's is on skipthedishes.ca. So shout out to Harvey.
They are.
Some frings.
Yeah, frings. Oh.
Go on Skip the Dishes. Get some Harvey's frings. The best of both worlds, because I am also an onion rings man myself. In other Oilers news from this past week, Connor McDavid, the team's nominee for the Masterton Trophy, undoubtedly had an amazing comeback last offseason to start the season with the boys against Vancouver, scored a ridiculously beautiful goal. Connor was back. We didn't know how bad things were until Whatever It Takes came out, but then you really saw the work that he put into getting back on the ice. My question for you, gentlemen, an Edmonton Oiler has never won the Masterton Trophy ever. Not once. Not ever. Do you think Connor has a chance at winning this trophy, Mr. Tyler Yaremchuk?
Here's where I'm going, and I don't want to just squash this whole argument before it starts, but my problem when it comes to the Masterton and trying to debate who's going to win it is that I don't even know if they need to pick one winner every year, because you look at that list, man, and like, for me as an Oilers fan to sit here and like shake my fist and be like, McDavid for the Masterton, he needs to win. Okay, but who am I to discount what Oscar Lindblom's gone through? Who am I to discount what Jay Bouwmeester went through, what Bobby Ryan went through? You can go on and on and on down that list. So for me, I honestly wouldn't hate if the NHL got rid of naming one winner for the Masterton and just put a plaque area in the Hockey Hall of Fame and every year have 31 winners, man, because all of these guys have a story to tell. And I have a tough time sitting here and making a case, quote unquote, for Connor McDavid to win the Masterton when, yes, what he went through, like, he would be a deserving winner. Oscar Lindblom would be deserving, as I said, Bobby Ryan, Jay Bouwmeester, on and on and on. Like, to me, it's one of those awards that just being nominated is such a high honor. And I think all 31 guys who were nominated for this deserve the love.
I like that a lot. Rick, Dan?
I'm going to jump in here because my thing, I agree with what you're saying, Tyler. And I do think that most teams have a good nominee for this, but the thing for me with the Masterton Trophy is that every team puts forward a nominee. And so the ones where you're like, okay, they just picked a guy from the team because William Nylander went through a contract holdout last year. Giordano is old. Like some of the reasons it makes them look like it's a weird nomination. And you're absolutely right, Tyler. There's so many stories from around the league where you're like, holy shit, you know, like you said, Oscar Lindblom has gone through, you know, spades of things to deal with this year alone, and he deserves to have his name on there. And I'm not saying that Mark Giordano isn't a good player, but like, why do teams feel like they have to nominate somebody if there's somebody that doesn't fit that criteria? And so I always feel like while it's a great honor, it's also this like weird honor for some of those guys, because they're like, for the Oilers, for us having not ever won it, there is a lot of years where we put forward a guy because he exists. It's just there's no heartfelt reason behind it. So I wish that the award would become a league-wide thing, that every team can have a person that gets it if they feel like they truly have a person that deserves it and isn't just there because they held out for a contract and then they had a good year after that. Like, it's just a bar that you have to have some criteria that's set out better than it is right now.
Well, then let's meet in the middle then, and then the league just gives out 10 or 15 every year, kind of like Hall of Fame inductions in some places, in some different leagues, right? Just pick out the ones that are deserving, and this way, you know, the ones who actually deserve it get in, and then the ones who you kind of like, we just had to pick one on our team, but nobody really fits the deal, they're left out. So let's make it 10, 15, not even a real number, just pick out the real ones, let them do their thing on, you know, march them across the stage and just be done with it.
I mean, I wouldn't want to decide who wins this.
No.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it, Beko. That's a perfect way to put it.
No, you'd put like 8 guys in a bag and say, well, the rest of you guys don't even compare to this. Now it's up to you 8. And then at that point, just say, all you 8, you guys are the Masterton team.
I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind that option.
Right, because obviously there is obviously a line between those who do and don't, but are just kind of there. That's why they're there. So let's just take the, you know, the 8 or 10 or whatever it is that actually deserve it, that would actually be in the conversation, wrap them up as one, and say you are the 2020 Masterton team.
I wouldn't mind that either.
Yeah, like I think that's a good way to do it.
It's almost like an all-team award kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Everyone who fits that category.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I didn't mean to turn this into a debate about like the legitimacy of the award or any of the nominees or anything
that. Yeah. I absolutely did.
To me, it's just like, you know, I just feel like I get a weird feeling when I have to like sit there and, you know, I was doing it this week on the radio and it was like, you know, I don't know if we really need to sit here and go, yeah, this guy deserves it more than this guy.
But that's the issue, right? Because it's the PHWA. So it's each local guy looking at their team and picking a guy out and just forcing a person in there when really all those writers can look and say, you know, what Connor McDavid went through is impressive. What Oscar Lindblom went through is impressive. Like those are things that any kind of non-homer can do. But yeah, it's like you said, you can start the conversation this way, but I think it is an important thing that we need to talk about or that needs to be spoken about when you talk about this award, because like Ben Miller said, how do you choose? How do you choose one guy? It's silly.
But sticking with picking one guy for an award, we're going to change gears a little bit to Leon Draisaitl. As always, he is in conversation for the Hart Trophy this year, and the debates on Twitter are shockingly bad. People move the goalposts around every single year on what the Hart Trophy means, who should get it. Leon shouldn't be able to win it because he plays with Connor McDavid and blah, 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 blah. So my question for you guys, do you care about the Hart Trophy? Or are you kind of like me where I think, personally, the Ted Lindsay Award is a much more valuable award? That one is voted on by the players. If I'm a player, obviously I've never been anywhere close to playing in the NHL. So let's get at that out of the way. However, if I'm a player, I would much rather win an award that was voted on by my peers rather than a bunch of media who may have not even seen me play all season long. And some, I know it's fun when people publish their ballots. Gregor does it every year. And I love seeing who he votes for and having people yell at him one way or the other. But to me, I think the Ted Lindsay is where it's at. I want my peers to recognize what I did, not necessarily media from Boston or Toronto or Calgary or Vancouver or wherever. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you're right. The Ted Lindsay, definitely, you know, being judged by your peers as opposed to, you know, just some random media guys, definitely does, I think, mean more to the players. The Hart just has the name and has the history behind it. Yeah, I think they should definitely flip. And the big trophy, the trophy you really want to win is the one voted on by your peers. And at this point, honestly, it is. There are a couple other players out there who are kind of close. McKinnon's probably the closest, but I honestly don't see how you don't put Draisaitl in there. You've seen so many guys win it before when they have a great player on their team. Gretzky's winning it in the 80s all the time. Look at the damn team he is playing on. I'm surprised nobody fucking shit on him for that. Like, you can't hold the guy down because of who he has. Every one of these players on a good team has other good players on their team. And, to be fair, Leon got better when he left Connor's line.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, it's funny, like I said, it's funny how the goalposts move so much, because with Leon, it's like, oh, he plays on a team with Connor McDavid, so he can't win this. But then you got a guy like David Pastrnak, who is in the conversation. He played on one of the best lines in the NHL. So, I mean, just because those guys aren't named Connor McDavid that he plays with, does it discount the fact that he's playing with some incredible players? I don't know. To me, it's just, I don't understand why it's the Hart that gets put up on a pedestal as opposed to the one that's voted on by other hockey players.
I think you make a great point, Bag Milk. If I was a player, I would take more pride in winning the Lindsay, because then it's like, damn, everyone I played against this year, or not everyone, but majority of the players I played against and I competed against think I'm the best. Like, to me, that's a higher compliment. You're right. Like, I don't want to sit here, and I'm definitely not here to, like, shit on the media or anything, obviously.
No, that's not what I'm yeah, trying to do yeah, either. Yeah. It's just...
But I think it's different when it's coming from your peers.
Yeah. I'm not trying to shit on the media either. So I want to get that out there. I just think that every single year we talk about the Hart Trophy and it's, oh, can a guy play? Well, he can't win the Hart if his team didn't make the playoffs. Okay, well, this year there's no playoffs. Well, Leon Draisaitl's goal suppression was poor, despite the fact that he was leading the league or whatever. Well, he played on the power play with Connor McDavid. Okay, well, did David Pasternak not score power play goals? I don't know.
There's a lot less crap with the Lindsay. It just seems like clear cut, like, hey, the players think this guy's the best. Done. Here's the award.
Yeah, so I guess I don't understand why the Hart has always been put on, like, this is the one. This is the one everybody's talking about. When to me, like, if there was some kind of blogger champion award and all the bloggers are like, Bag Milk, you're our boy. And I'm like, hell yeah, blogger guys. Not just necessarily people that read the site and say, hey, fuck you, man. I don't care about you. Like, well,
I think I do think that there's like the conversation of the players versus the media is an actual conversation, though. And it's not to say that, like, any of us are dragging the media, but the reality is, like, they had to make the voting visible for people so that you could see the homer that votes for his home team player, even though that guy's not even in the conversation, right? So that comes into play. For me, I think it would be the Hart vote conversation would be better if each team's media nominated two of their own media guys to actually have the opinion of the whole team's media, instead of just anybody that's in the PHWA getting a vote. It's because it calls into question, you know, like you said, where, like, these guys that have these moving goalposts and they change their opinion from year to year, it just makes the award lesser because like you said, it's not cut and dry anymore. They're making it up as they go. Kucherov wins the award with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are the best team in the league by a long shot. And then Connor McDavid can't win it because he's on a really good team. Or sorry, he's got really good line mates. And it's like, well, what? Like, the conversation every single year changes the rules and it adjusts to appease whatever sentiment there is out there. So I think that, yeah, the media conversation does come into it because of the few bad apples that are in the mix that have had it made it be that our ballots can be seen now, or the ballots can be seen of all these guys. So yeah, I think that until then, the Ted Lindsay Award is more important, and the Hart Trophy kind of gets that asterisk next to it of, you know, well, they changed the rules this year again, so that's the guy that got it this year.
We'll see. I mean, Leon Draisaitl had a hell of a season. Art Ross Trophy in his belt, in his pocket, I should say. We'll see if he follows it up with a Hart. We'll see who wins the Ted Lindsay. To me, again, I think that one's the more important award of the two. But nobody cares what I think, people. Nobody cares what I think. However,
I care what you think.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you. Changing gears entirely here. I had a thought the other day about players that have moved on. I don't know if we were talking about it on Real Life or this is just kind of something that popped in my head randomly, but I want to look at Oilers that have moved on in the past that you kind of thought was, whether it was a walked away as a free agent or maybe as a trade, and just been like, man, that's the one that got away. Let's pretend that a specific Edmonton Oiler is that lady that you always had a crush on and you had a chance and it just didn't work out. You know, so I'll start off just to give you guys a thought about where my head is at with this. In the 90s, the Oilers were not a rich team. Often we would have players show up, they would have great years, and then they would bounce out because they just couldn't afford to keep them on a contract. Mine, that I think about specifically, was, man, I wish that the Oilers didn't lose Doug Weight. Before Connor, he was the last Oiler to score 100 points. He was the most skilled player on the team. He was fun to watch. He was the captain. I used to tuck my jersey in the back because of Doug Weight. I was a little bit young to watch Gretzky, but because of Doug Weight, I used to do it. I love the way he dangled. I love the way he played, and I love the way he loved the city. So he gets my vote on a guy who I just, he's the one that got away from me that it's always hurt. Gentlemen, who is your guy that just got away?
Well, being the same age area there, you kind of stole one easy one. I think one right around that same time that hurt just as bad, whether it been, it must have been just before too, would be Cujo.
Yeah, exact same thing. I remember him crying when he left.
Yeah, like, and it was the thing where we didn't have the money to keep him, and you know he was about to triple his salary and was still upset about leaving. We had someone with him. Those playoffs in 97, 98 were phenomenal. Then just having to get rid of him because he can't afford him, that hurt. And yeah, those are the, being a fan back in the 90s, that sucked. That was tough. You'd grow these guys and they become something where, you know what, we're about to be out of the basement and wham, they'd have to go off for a bigger paycheck, something we couldn't afford. And you just watch them leave the city.
Another one during that time, and I'm cutting you boys off, and I hope I steal your answer, Dan, is a guy like Bill Guerin. He spent, you know, about 2-3 full years here over the course of his time. He had some great seasons, 30-goal season, 24-goal season, and then again, the team just couldn't afford him, and he left. Sucked, man. It sucked.
You didn't steal my guy, but you stole somebody that was connected to my guy. The guy that was traded for Bill Guerin, Jason Arnott. He was always a guy to me that, you know, big power center, you know, that Eric Lindros kind of feel to him. And he had a down year. And so they went and made the deal for Bill Guerin. I think they traded away. I was trying to bring it up here. I think it was Brian Muir with Jason Arnott, to New Jersey for Guerin and somebody else. But anyways, just that, like, a guy that we had 33 goal season as a rookie, and you know, a team in Edmonton where we had watched, and we will have watched after that, a bunch of guys walk away for money. You had a guy that we had developed and made a star out of, you know, went on to get what, 900 plus points in his career in the NHL, and we had him, but he wasn't able to stick here, and then they sold him off to New Jersey.
Tyler, you're younger than all of us.
Yeah.
I'm like looking forward to your answer, because whether it's a guy who walked away as free agency or whatever, I'm curious to know what you think.
Like, the Doug Weight one is interesting because I don't ever remember watching him play on the Oilers, right? But there's the part of me that goes, man, like, what would it have been like if he was a career Oiler? Like, how different would things have been? Same thing goes for Ryan Smith as well, right? Like, being a young Oilers fan, watching him get traded, we all have painful memories of that. Like, wouldn't it have been nice? And I know he eventually did come back and retired as an Oiler at a couple more years, but like, it would have been nice if he was a career Oiler, right? Like, I think it's just kind of guys like that who went off and had those second stints. Recently, if we're talking about guys that left over contract disputes, one of the guys we brought up on Real Life last week, Erik Gustafsson. That's a guy who the Oilers couldn't sign after drafting him. And now he turned into a 60-point D-man with the Blackhawks. Like, it would have been nice to have that guy on the back end right now. But I consider myself lucky because I really didn't grow up in the era where the Oilers, it seemed like, were just a glorified farm team for the rich teams in the NHL, right? And I think where I'm going to go with this answer is not answering your question at all, but shouting out Darryl Cates, who's kind of put a lot of money into this team and turned Edmonton from one of the poor into one of those teams that, you know what, if they want someone, they're not going to get outbid.
I mean, that's the interesting part about the salary cap, right?
It's, yeah.
But I mean, there are teams like the Arizonas, the Carolinas, they're still budget teams despite the salary cap. But you can't have the New York Rangers approach to when they would just throw $9 million at Bobby Hull.
When Glenn Sather moves from the poor Edmonton Oilers to the money rich New York Rangers and just forgot how to manage money and
talent. No, man, I swear that was the owner's guy saying, you know what, you need to go get everybody. And I don't think he really got to run his own game there. You know, one player we did miss though, that, you know, he was here for a very, very short time that we should have made a lot more out of, He's from Fort Saskatchewan, Ray Whitney.
Ah.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Joffrey Lupul.
Well, that would have worked out nice. But Ray Whitney, man, he signed in 97. He played 9 games here, and we let him go on waivers.
Yep. Yeah.
And then look what he goes and does.
Yeah, he went on and was he, like, correct me if this is just off the top of my head. Wasn't he a stick boy for the Oilers as a kid?
Yes, he was.
Like, so he would have had the whole story, start to finish. It would have been one of the best stories in NHL history, but no, I guess not.
This is a good question for next week. This is a good question for next week, too, though, is like the opposite side of this, right? The players that the Oilers scooped from somebody else early on and then made into something special. Like, I think in Jason Smith, off the top of my head,
Steve, we grabbed him
from the Leafs. Steve Staios, exactly. Like, guys where we took the diamonds in the rough and we made them into what they were. Might be a good question for next week.
I like that.
Fair. I like that too. I also like, I'm looking at some of these Rangers rosters from the late 90s, 2000s. And,
our team?
There were a lot
Rangers
of
the Rangers in the Rangers in like 94 had like 8 or 9 former Oilers on that team.
Also on those teams, the late 90s, early 2000s, shout out to Dan Blackburn, double blocker. Bring that back. We are running out of time on this week's podcast, gentlemen. So that brings us to the Oodle Noodle Hot and Cold Performers of the Week. If you head into any of the 13 locations for a takeout, curbside delivery, or dine-in order, they are donating 10% of those orders to local charities. So this week it is Zoe's Pet Rescue, or Zoe's Animal Rescue, and they're doing great work. Obviously, they need help all year round, but right now is actually their high season for adoptions. So shout out to the folks at Oodle Noodle for making that happen. It's a great cause. Get yourself something delicious to eat. Know that you're doing your part to help as well. So as we always do, we start with the cold performers of the week. Tyler, get your buttons ready. I'm going to go ahead and start this because this one happened to me the other day and it fucking irritated me. I was walking my man, Frank. He was on leash. We were just walking through a park and out comes a dog trotting along off leash. The guy does not seem to care that his dog is approaching mine. Frank's very, very friendly, so he doesn't care. That dog attacked Frank.
What?
Yeah, so he attacked Frank a little bit, but my boy absolutely dummied this little poop. I don't know if you can picture my dog. He's a fairly small dog, but he's 35 pounds of muscle, and that dog did not have a chance. So I split it up. Everything was fine. But my cold performer of the week is you fuckwits that allow your dog off leash, even though, first of all, A, they should have been leashed, and B, they're not good with other dogs. Train your dogs, people. It's not that hard. Cold performer of the week.
I'm giving an air horn just for Frank for standing his own. I know I'm supposed to have a cold performer button, but no, Frank gets the air horn.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Frank's a little ball of muscle, and he fucking dummied that dog. And it was like, part of me was impressed. I was like, man, who knew you had that in you? But at the same point, like, he shouldn't have to, man. He's such a friendly dog. And if that's how your dog is, don't leave him off leash. Seems easy. Anyway, that's my gripe for the week. Rick, your cold performer of the week, brought to you by Oodle Noodle.
I'm just going to throw it out here. It's both sides. It's baseball. Figure shit out. Let's go. Everyone else has kind of moved on. Let's go. Figure it out. This is a perfect time for you guys. You could be the only ones playing right now. You're missing out. And now you're going to share time with everybody else. But let's just get going.
I'm going to hop right in and piggyback on yours, Rick, because that was mine, man. I love baseball. Anyone who knows me knows how much I love playing baseball, watching baseball, anything baseball. And the owners of this league are taking a diehard fan like myself, and they are killing the fan inside of me. These guys got to figure it out. I just read a tweet from Ken Rosenthal that said another proposal has come down from Major League Baseball to the players. I hope this is the one that fucking figures it out. Baseball's got to get that done.
It's been interesting, though. Like, you see other leagues, like the NHL. We've seen so many lockouts in the NHL, but in this situation, both sides are working together to get back on the ice. Obviously, both sides have made concessions and compromises and all of that, but they seem to be working together towards a common goal, whereas baseball doesn't seem to be that case at all, right? At least not right now. Yeah. Dan, your Oodle Noodle cold performer of the week.
It's not so much a a drag on the people that aren't doing it, but it's our it's the city's fields and grassy areas, which are, of course, not going to be able to get any love or as much love this year from the cutters. But, oh boy, trying to walk through a field of dandelions is tough on my allergies. So
just cut the grass across from my place. I watched them earlier today.
They said that they're going to be cutting that back by about a third this year, cutting the lawn three times as less.
These guys have been out twice, and at least in the last.
Well, weeks. Shit, Rick. Send
Where
them
are
by
you?
Me. I'll go forward of the week.
Dan, I guess you could say they are just fucking ass right now.
It is funny though, because like it's so I live next to a couple of different parks. I'm lucky, so I got to take Frank out again. Goes to my cold performer of the week. However, they're like it seems like they're cutting part of it, but another part that would normally be cut is just being left. So it's like it's kind of like the deep rough on a golf course or something like that. And my man is diving in that tall grass.
They're not getting very close to the tree. I'm taking a closer look right now. They're not getting too close to the trunk of the tree, but
because they got to get those numbers up. They got to cover more ground.
I've got a couple of fields around me, man, and they all look good. Come on over to Oliver.
If you guys would like us to show up and judge the fields near your house, just let us know where you're at, and we'll come and judge the grass cutting near you. Looking at a safe social distance. Looking at the hot performers of the week, we're going to end off this week's podcast with some good news. Tyler Yaremchuk, who is your Oodle Noodle hot performer of the week?
You know what? There is one, and I think the one I'm thinking of, we're all thinking of, and maybe we'll get to him in a second here, is like a collective hot performer. So I'm going to go a different direction with mine. It's those sexy new Nation beer cans for July 1. Saw them on Instagram, saw them teased. I'm liking that Nation beer cans are almost going to become like a collector's item. Like you're going to want to get like one of each as they keep coming. So those new Nation beer cans are my hot performer of the week.
Cash money.
Mr. Nation Dan, your hot performer
of the week. Mine's pretty oddly specific. I just retweeted it there, and I'll get that out for Tyler to share. But it was a post that was shared earlier this week with Sonic 102.9, where a young man saw that there was an older gentleman in a scooter that was just trying to get his burger on at a Burger King joint and couldn't get in, of course, because of COVID. And so he was trying to go through the drive-thru. So this young man went out of his way to help the man with his order, helped him pick up his food from the window. He actually ended up paying for the guy's meal. And so I want to give props to this unknown man, young man from Edmonton, but always huge for Edmontonians to see Edmontonians helping other Edmontonians in need. So my hot performer of the week is the Burger King hero.
Put some respect on my name. Tyler.
Oh, Tyler's there to press the button. Good for you, Tyler.
Rick, your Oodle Noodle hot performer of the week.
Well, I'm going to take mine back to the beginning of this timeline, and we're going to go back to last Friday. Everybody knows I work downtown, so I had a pretty good view of the Black Lives Matter rally, march, whatever you want to call it, up and down Jasper and down 109th Street. And it was very impressive to see. Everything was very well behaved. It was something I've never seen before in my lot of years on this earth. So, yeah, it was really impressive. I just want to say everybody that was there did a very good job in keeping things under control and not letting the moment get to them.
Definitely, I'll just add on to that. Proud moment for the city. I like seeing it too. All the pictures, all the videos, everybody that went down there.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, that intersection at Jasper and 109 from the patio, it was crazy.
There was a lot of people down there. A lot of people down there. I'll finish off the hot performers of the week with what Tyler kind of alluded to a little bit. Edmonton Oilers prospect Cooper Marody wrote a beautiful song in honor of his teammate Colby Cave entitled Agape. And I want to give a shout out to Daniel Nugent Bowman from The Athletic, who interviewed Emily Cave on what this means to her. And I just want to read a portion of his article. Go on over to The Athletic and check it out for the full interview. It's very, very touching. So from Emily Cave, I want to thank Cooper Marody for the song and specifically for using words that meant so much to Colby and I. Agape was the word that Colby and I said to each other because we felt that I love you was never fully describe the amount of love we had for each other. Agape is the highest form of love, selfless, sacrificial, and unconditional love. It persists no matter the circumstance. I'm so grateful I got to experience this love with my best friend. Getting to love Kolb is the best thing I will ever do and continue to do until we see each other again. So we are going to end off episode 90 of Oilers Nation Radio by listening to a little bit of the song dedicated to Colby Cave by Cooper Marody entitled Agape.
You're heaven gain an angel, 'cause I'm here. But I know earth still has one, 'cause you're not. You wanna see me, and I wanna see you. But you still have some loving left to do. So live it out and make me proud. Be everything I know you are.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.